Janajanaslakaya. Chakshusamilitan Jaina Tasmai Sri Guravay Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sa Panjantikam. Bancha Kalpatubhyascha Kripasindhu Vayibhacha Patitanam Pabinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna, with all the sages, has arrived in Janakpur, Mathila. And I'm sure you remember the wonderful feat that Krishna immediately performed to satisfy the devotees. So Krishna divided himself, or expanded himself, rather, into a second Krishna, and then he went with all the sages and a complete retinue. To both the king Bahulasva, the descendant of Janaka Maharaj in the dynasty of King Nimi, a great devotee in Mathila, in the family of Janak Maharaj, who was the father of Sita Devi, who Rama came there, Balaram had come there, and now Krishna had come, and he expanded himself. And what's going to be described first is his dealings with the king. And even more than Krishna's dealings with the king, we're going to hear of the king's mentality when dealing with the Supreme Lord, his Lord, Krishna. Now, why is this important to know of his mentality? Who will answer that question? Why is it important to know of his mentality? Okay. Adi Purusha, Lila Purushottam, you can both answer at the same time. Yes. Because his mentality, his devotion, his mood, his Krishna consciousness has attracted Krishna to come from so far away to see him. Because he was unable to go and see Krishna. In a similar way, I am unable to go and see Krishna, but for a different reason than King Bahulasva. But if somehow or another, we can attract Krishna, then all problems are solved. And this was the mood of Srila Prabhupada. And that mood he received directly from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada's words, don't try to see Krishna, act in such a way that Krishna will see you. What is the essence of that type of consciousness? Now we know from so much hearing about the glories of Vrindavan, we know about their mood, and Krishna willing, we shall visit Vrindavan even from Janakpur or Mathila. But we will hear something very, very, or so many things, very important for our own Krishna consciousness from the mouth or from the heart of King Bahulasva. But first, the greeting. When King Bahulasva, this is text 27 through 29, when King Bahulasva, a descendant of Janak, saw Lord Krishna approaching his house from a distance with the sages, who was somewhat fatigued from the journey, He immediately arranged to have seats of honor brought out for them. So, first thing, he saw their need. He greeted them according to their need, not exactly at first according to his desire even. He was sensitive to what they needed at that moment. He seated them because they were fatigued. Sometimes when a guest comes, we have our plans, and regardless of how that person is feeling or what he needs, we impose what we want on them. Now, what would be the difference in the mood, so to speak, in the consciousness? Say an exalted guest comes and we impose our consciousness on that exalted guest, and we want him to do this and we want him to do that, or we want these things to happen. So he'll naturally, because he's exalted, he'll give something. But the difference is that if somehow or another, due to our affection and respect, then if somehow or another we can deal with this exalted person in such a way that his heart melts, then everything will come flowing out. A simple point, completely hidden. He immediately arranged to have seats of honor brought out for them. And after they were all comfortably seated, the wise king, his heart overflowing with joy, and his eyes clouded with tears. Please keep this in mind. His heart was overflowing with joy because Krishna, his beloved Lord, had come to his home and he was seeing him. He had desired for so long to see Krishna. He couldn't see him circumstantially. He was engaged in his own service in faraway Mathila, but his desire was burning. And then finally, by Krishna's mercy, Krishna was there. His heart was overflooded, and his eyes flooded as well with tears of joy. He bowed down to them and washed their feet with intense devotion. Really, when we're washing with water or offering a flower or fruit, what are we actually offering? There's the externals of the offering, but the externals are just that. They are the externals. They are the gesture of the expression of the internal. That is seva. The sweeping of the floor of the temple, the offering of the arti to the deities. Krishna needs neither sweepers or flowers or incense or water, but these are the external manifestation of the internal bhav. So asnami paratatmana, I accept them when they're offered with devotion. When the Vaikuntha planets are described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, it describes how the ladies there, goddesses of fortune, are cleaning the marble in Krishna's palaces, but it is not dirty at all. There is no dust. But they're cleaning it just out of their devotion, wanting to make offerings to Krishna, expressions of their bhakti. So he washed their feet with intense devotion. And taking the wash water, which could purify the entire world, he sprinkled it on his head and the heads of his family members. So much respect. Then he worshipped all those great lords by offering them fragrant sandalwood paste, flower garlands, fine clothing and ornaments. He was a king. He benedicted them with what he had according to his ability. Incense, lamps, argya, cows, bulls. He was a king. Tears in his eye and joy in his heart. And the king knew that Krishna had come by his causeless mercy. In the Sanskrit, Sukhasinam Mahamana. Mahamana means great-minded. And Srila Jiva Goswami says, describes the greatness of his mind, and that was that it was fixed on Krishna. And this is the perfection of having a mind. Fixing the consciousness on Krishna. Having the consciousness absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And this is so attractive to Krishna that he came. Text 30. When Krishna and the sages, when they had eaten to their full satisfaction, for their further pleasure, the king began to speak slowly and in a gentle voice as he held Lord Vishnu's feet in his lap. So Krishna was seated. Beautiful Krishna. Effulgent Krishna, unlimitedly beautiful Krishna, unlimitedly effulgent Krishna. Krishna had been compared to the sun. And the sages also similarly effulgent to planets. Their effulgence compared to planets was not as great as the unlimited effulgence and beauty of Krishna. And as Krishna was seated, he took Krishna's feet and placed them in his lap. And he massaged them gently. He was massaging Krishna's feet, which were so soft. And our acharyas have described, this is why he massaged them gently, because they were so tender and soft. It is to be noted that those same feet walked all around Giriraj and on top of Giriraj. Everywhere in Vrindavan is marked with the lotus feet footprints of Krishna. The dust has been touched by Krishna's lotus feet. And the residents of Vrindavan, they would respect Krishna's footprints, and even the animals. And no one would walk over Krishna's footprints to disturb them with further footprints on top of them. When Krishna was dancing with the gopis around Vamsivat, the gopis were following, or actually Srimati Radharani had gone away alone with Krishna, and the gopis were following the footprints of Krishna, and they saw the markings on Krishna's feet impressed in the ground of Braja. So the king was looking directly at Krishna's feet, pink and soft. The gopis were always thinking, if Krishna is walking out in the forest, and in the forest there are, especially somehow or another, right around here, these little sharp point. Has anyone experienced the little prickers over there? Yes. And the little rocks, and sometimes even the ankur, the sprouts, can be sharp of the grass, even though grass is soft, but the sprouts of the grass can be quite sharp. And the gopis were experiencing anxiety. that Krishna's lotus feet, which were so tender, might be disturbed and pricked, and that would cause Krishna pain. And to save Krishna from pain, they were ready to sacrifice everything, because their whole consciousness rested in Krishna. So one might ask, if this was such a cause of pain for all the residents of Vrindavan, including Mother Yashoda, why didn't Krishna wear shoes or slippers? And actually, when Krishna began to herd the calves, when he was so young, he was offered slippers, shoes made out of leather to wear. And Krishna refused them out of respect for the cows. He wouldn't wear leather shoes. That's something to remember and put into practice. And when Balaram saw that Krishna wouldn't wear leather shoes, he refused to wear them also. So he was massaging Krishna's feet with great tenderness and gentility. And he saw upon Krishna's feet there were special markings. And those markings, there were 19 special markings on the soles of Krishna's feet. And the devotees meditate on these markings, because meditating on the markings on Krishna's lotus feet have special effects. We'll mention a few of the markings. There is a chakra on Krishna's lotus feet below, I think it's on his right foot, below the toe, the big toe. And that chakra, it removes, it kills, destroys the devotees who meditates on them, his enemies. Pretty good, yeah? And what are those enemies? There are six of them, and they are not this person and that person and that person and that person who did something to me 35 years ago and I haven't forgotten it at all. And later, he will find out, there's a saying, vengeance is a dish best served cold. But the devotees don't see others as their enemies. Rather, they see lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy as their enemies. A meditation upon the chakra on lotus feet, on the lotus feet of Krishna, destroys the enemies. And also, there is an umbrella right below the chakra. And that umbrella, although it's not described in the Padma Purana, Sri Uddhava describes Krishna's lotus feet like an umbrella. An umbrella generally, how do you say it in Sanskrit or Hindi, an umbrella? Chhatri, yes. So an umbrella usually has the simple effect of protecting us from the outside elements. But Uddhava says that Krishna's lotus feet not only destroys the miseries of this world, but this umbrella, just picture this. There's an umbrella that naturally... Welcome home, Prashanta. This umbrella not only protects the devotees from the hot sun and the rain, but this umbrella rains from the inside nectar. So it's from the outside it protects, but from the inside it rains down nectar upon the heads of those who carry the lotus feet of Krishna and meditate upon them. And then there is a thunderbolt on Krishna's lotus feet. And if we meditate on the thunderbolt, if we meditate on the thunderbolt, the effect of that is to destroy the mountain of sins that impede and stop our devotion to Krishna. And if we meditate upon the lotus that's on Krishna's lotus feet, then our mind, which is compared to a bee, becomes attracted to those lotus feet. And if we meditate upon the gold, the ankush, I think, ankush, that the like the mahout, the keeper of the controller of the elephant, he uses the a goad, a sharp pointed object, to control the elephant. And if we meditate upon this ankush that is on the lotus feet of Krishna, our mind, which is compared to an elephant, which is so hard to control, can be controlled. And if we meditate upon the flag that is on Krishna, decorates Krishna's lotus feet, we will be victorious in our search for Krishna. So the king was massaging these tender reddish lotus feet, pinkish lotus feet, and he was very happy. And then he began to speak sweet words. And I would like to read, there's only six verses that he speaks. It's quite short. And it's very interesting, and not by chance, that after the king will speak, and tomorrow we will hear the next speaker, the next greeting, and obviously that's going to be Shrutadev. If the king speaks in six verses to Krishna, how many verses do you think Shrutadev will speak? Who said six? 60. Six or 60? Six. Whoever was thinking six, because they're equal. They're equal. A king and a poor Brahmin who'll have a completely different kind of greeting because he has no opulence. He has the same devotion, though. He'll also speak six verses. And then Krishna will speak after that. And he won't speak six verses. He'll speak seven. So what I'd like to do is just to give us a flow of these verses. I'll read all six of them and then we'll go over them in detail. And you can follow along in the verse sheets. Sri Bahalasva said, "O Almighty Lord, you are the soul of all created beings." In other words, as the soul gives life to the body, Krishna gives life to us. He gives life to the universe. He gives life to material existence. And he gives life to each and every one of us. And as our life is so dear to us, Krishna, being the life of our life, is so dear to every living entity, to each and every one of us. You are the soul of all created beings, their self-illuminated witness, and he sees all. And now, you are giving your audience to us who constantly meditate on your lotus feet. You have so kindly come, and we have been waiting for this by meditating upon you, by thinking about you, not once, not twice, but constantly. You have said, "Neither Ananta Goddess Sri Lakshmi Devi nor unborn Brahma is dearer to me than my unalloyed devotee. And to prove your own words true, you have now revealed yourself to our eyes. What person who knows this truth, how dear the devotees are to you. What person who knows this truth would ever abandon your lotus feet when you are ready to give your very self to peaceful sages who call nothing their own? Tvamakinchana gochara. Appearing in the Yadu dynasty, you have spread your glories, which can remove all the sins of the three worlds, just to deliver those entrapped in the cycle of birth and death. Krishna is so kind to his devotees, and he gives us, by his activities, the methodology of freeing ourselves from the mountain of sins that cover who we really are, freeing us from the terrible, painful, miserable cycle of birth and death, and allowing us to come to him. And that is his glories, Krishna's glories. Obeisances to you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, whose intelligence is ever unrestricted, unlimitedly intelligent, unlimitedly intelligent. There is no limit or end to his intelligence. Your intelligence is unrestricted. Obeisances to the sage Nara Narayana, who always undergoes austerities in perfect peace. And then his request, please stay a few days in our house along with these brahmanas, O all-pervading one, please stay for a few days in our house along with these brahmanas, O all-pervading one, and with the dust of your feet, sanctify, purify, cleanse, and make your own this dynasty of Nimi. Very simple. But this is his heart. And this is also the instruction that he is giving us as his heart comes out of his mouth in the presence of Krishna to teach us how we could one day find ourselves in that fortunate position with Krishna's lotus feet upon our laps and massaging. It worked for him. And if we follow his instructions properly, fully, completely, then one day, our turn will come. So let us now go over these one by one. The first verse is 31, where Bahulasva said, O Almighty Lord, Bhavan hi sarva bhutanam atma shakshi swadrig vibhu atanas twat padam bhojam smaratam darshanam gata. O Almighty Lord, you are the soul of all created beings, their self-illuminated witness. Self-illuminated means that His potency comes from himself alone, and he is the one who is swatantra. He is not dependent upon anyone. He is the Supreme Lord. And he, as the previous expression was, you, the soul of all created beings, he gives life to us, but nothing and no one except the residents of Vrindavan, but we're speaking tattva here, gives life to him. He is self-illuminated, and he's been compared to the sun already. And he's the self-illumined witness. He knows all. And now, he says, you are giving your audience to us, so powerful, and yet you are here in front of me. You have given your audience to us who constantly meditate on your lotus feet. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, explaining this verse. O Supreme Atma, the Supreme Self, you are the producer of all consciousness. Therefore, by your mercy, make me, who am unconscious, conscious. Make me conscious. Krishna conscious. In other words, to be conscious means to perceive things accurately. When we walk around in a fog, we see little glimpses of reality. But we don't see things accurately. To see things accurately means to be conscious of Krishna. O witness, O Shakti, as you see good and bad activities, you see the devotional actions I daily performed for you. You see all, so there's no need to inform you of anything. Therefore, I can get your audience only if you yourself come by your free will. I am not fortunate to be able to come and see you, since it is impossible for me to give up even for a second serving your deity form in my house. As I have been always thinking of you, you have come here. That is like Giriraj must stay forever in Bombay, fixed in devotion. And then Prabhupada comes to Bombay. What was the exact expression? Giriraj can never leave Bombay. But this Giriraj, he can never leave Braj. And that Giriraj, by that service. So this is devotion. This is devotional service. This is seva. This is seva. These deities, as he was worshiping, they are Krishna. And how could I give them up? What does that mean? There is one very heavy pastime that Prabhupada took part in when in one of the early ISKCON farms, there wasn't enough. The farm was very poor, and there wasn't enough food to feed the cows, and some of the cows died. And Prabhupada was so upset. And he said, how many Brahmins died? Very heavy. There are so many instances, and there's one little story also from Prabhupada's pastimes, also from Bombay, that is fixed in my heart. When these Gundas were coming to break down the temple, and they were there, and they were pulling the devotees out so that they could break the temple. And one Mataji, Maitihili, they were pulling her by the hair, and she was fighting them to protect Radharasa Bihari. She's one Mataji, and there were these Gundas to protect the deities. To protect Krishna, this is devotion. And when we have devotion like that, those type of activities are completely natural if one has devotion. And if one doesn't have devotion, when the Gundas come, we go. Because our devotion is to our body. In illusion, thinking that's ourself, but here, because it's here, he's saying that you are the soul of all created beings. You are my life. My devotion is naturally to what gives life to me, and it is you. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadan. This is a devotee, and this is the residence of Vrindavan. This is their mood. It's completely natural. It is not imposed by the concept, oh yes, this is what it means to be a devotee, and therefore I should act in this way, and therefore when something happens, an extraordinary circumstance, I think, oh yes, this is our philosophy, and therefore I should act in this way. But this comes from the heart out, this type of devotion. And this is the natural process. This is the occurrence that should come by the proper following of Krishna consciousness. So when a devotee is, or a soul is, actually turns to Krishna with devotion in this way, Krishna becomes in their hand, captivated by them. So therefore, he's traveled because they have such devotion, the king and Shrutadeva, he's traveled all the way in this, with the sages, and they're tired, and Krishna's undergone this like austerity because he is attracted to the devotion of his devotee. The devotee is attracted to Krishna. They give everything to Krishna, and Krishna gives everything to the devotee. Aham bhakta paradino hi aswatantra. I am not independent, Krishna says. He places himself under his devotees. And this is exhibited to the highest extent in this land of Braja, of Vrindavan. And therefore, Vrindavan is so sweet. And anyone who gets a glimpse of Vrindavan and what it means also becomes sweet. One who ingests some of the sweetness of Braja becomes sweet too. Vrindavan and the mood of the Brijbasis is, we could say it's so powerful, but it's unlimitedly powerful because it controls the unlimitedly powerful Krishna. He's unlimitedly powerful, and the residents of Vrindavan control him. There is one pastime that was very significant. Of course, all the pastimes are so significant. But because this pastime was just before and before Krishna actually left Gokul and went to Vrindavan, because it indicated that there was danger in Gokul. And therefore, Upananda, after hearing this pastime, this story that his wife narrated to him, he suggested in the assembly that we move to Vrindavan from Gokul. So one day, Krishna and Balaram, one day, every day when they were little, they were so naughty. And you see this in Vrindavan even to this day, that sometimes these little babies, and practically a little baby a little bit bigger than the little baby is taking care of the little baby. These little girls about this big, they're carrying around the next generation down, the next one down, the lolly down, and they're holding them and taking care of them. So one lolly of Vrindavan, two of them were taking care of Krishna and Balaram when Krishna and Balaram were little. So little. And Krishna and Balaram was so naughty. And they wanted to get free. So they were watching them. The two nurses were watching them. And then for a moment, they were distracted. A moment, And that was just all that Krishna and Balaram needed, and they went and hid somewhere. So naturally, what did the two young girls do if they were hiding, if Krishna and Balaram were hiding? They went to look for them. And that was just according to Krishna's plan, because they looked in the wrong place, they went that way. So therefore, Krishna and Balaram, little Krishna and Balaram, went that way. And they went down to the Yamuna to join their friends. And what were they doing? Just playing with their friends by the Yamuna in a place that was so deep. So the two young girls went and told Yashoda Maya and Rohini Maya, who were cooking for Krishna and Balaram and Nanda Maharaj. And Yashoda Maya kept on cooking and sent Rohini, please, you go now and bring back Krishna and Balaram, because they've been playing already all morning and there's some danger there. So Rohini called for Krishna and Balaram, and the two were so engaged with playing with their friends, they pretended not to hear and they just kept on playing. So Rohini came back somewhat frustrated, and she knew that Krishna had some fear of Mother Yashoda. The Supreme Lord, Krishna, the all-powerful Lord, had fear of Mother Yashoda. This also comes out in the Damodar Lila, where Krishna is crying. Mother Yashoda is chastising him and saying that I'm going to tie you up, and he's going like this, and tears are running down his eyes. Kunti Devi describes this. And she describes the tears coming from Krishna's eyes as inconceivable, because death itself is afraid of Krishna and Krishna is afraid of Mother Yashoda. And in his comment on this verse, Srila Sridhar Swami says, this is wonderful. And Kunti Devi is expressing her amazement because the Supreme All-Powerful Lord is playing the part of an ordinary child afraid of his mother. And Srila Jiva Goswami very respectfully says, no. Taking it further, the mood of Vrindavan, the truly amazing thing is that Krishna is actually afraid of Mother Yashoda. Her Shuddha Vatsalya Prem, her maternal affection, has taken Krishna's consciousness, his unlimited Sarvagya, Sarvashakti, self-illuminated witness consciousness, and compressed it. Her love compresses his consciousness and forces him into the mood of a little boy who's afraid of his mother chastising him. That is the power of the Brijbasi's love. That is the power of Mother Yashoda's love. And her love is, she's willing, as we mentioned previously, she's willing to give up her life 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times, unlimited times, to save Krishna from experiencing the slightest inconvenience. Her sense of self is not me and there's Krishna. It's just I am Krishna, or even more than that on her level. Krishna is mine. Krishna is my lala. He's my boy. He's everything to me. Everything. It's completely natural and spontaneous that she thinks of him 24 hours a day, like all the residents of Vrindavan do. Natural, spontaneous. So when Mother Rohini couldn't bring back Krishna and Balaram, she called for Mother Yashoda, whose love was so powerful, unlimitedly powerful, that Krishna was afraid. So she went out. And she began to call Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami points to her words requesting us to taste the sweetness of her words. She said, Krishna, Krishna, Vindaksha, Tata ihastanam piba, Alam viharai chuchanta, Krida shranto asiputraka. Krishna, Krishna, Aravindaksha, O Krishna, O lotus-eyed one. Tata means my darling. Her words, her affection is coating her words. Ehi stanam piba, please come and drink the milk. She's calling him. He's playing far away with the boys. And her love-filled words call him. Alam viharai chuchanta. There is no necessity. You drink my milk. There is no necessity of you playing anymore. You must be tired because of hunger and thirst. You've been playing so long. Please come home, my darling. And then Krishna didn't come home, because he was playing, and he was playing, because not only did Mother Yashoda with her love compress his consciousness into being a little boy, all the cowherd boys had that same potency by the nature of their love, and he wanted to play and play with his beloved cowherd boyfriend. So he didn't immediately respond. So then Mother Yashoda, being very intelligent, said, my dear Baladev, also calling him Tata, oh darling Baladev, oh best of our family, please come immediately with your younger brother, because she thought that if Balaram's attention would be caught, then he would be able to hold Krishna's hand and bring him too. So she changed her tactic. Oh, Baladev, please come immediately with your younger brother Krishna. You both ate in the morning, and now you ought to eat something more. And then, really trying to pierce Balaram's consciousness so he would come home, she said, Nanda Maharaj, the king of Raja, is now waiting to eat. Oh, my dear son, Balaram, and he is waiting for you. Therefore, come back to please us. Because even if you are not hungry, Nanda Maharaj can't eat without you. Please come back to please us. And all the boys playing with you and Krishna should now go to their homes. And then, and as she was saying this, she was calling from a distance, Krishna, Balaram, because she was moving closer all the time and she didn't want them to run away. So she was attracting their minds with her words and still walking closer and closer. And then she said, my dear son, because of playing all day back to Krishna, your body has been covered by dust and sand. Therefore, come back, take your bath, and cleanse yourself. She's walking closer and closer to him. Because today, this is your Janma Nakshatra. And every month, the Nakshatra, the constellation of the birth of Krishna would come. And every month they would have a celebration. So she said, my dear Krishna, today is that conjunction, that nakshatra of your birth. The moon is conjunct with the auspicious sign of your birth. Therefore, be pure and give cows in charity to the Brahmanas. We're going to have a festival. She was lying. It wasn't Krishna's birthday. But soon as Krishna heard, oh, because Krishna was very attached ever since he was so little to giving charity to the Brahmins. So she caught his ear as she was walking forward, and she caught his attention, oh, to give charity to the Brahmins. And then when she was right next to him, she caught him. Just see how all your playmates of your own age have been cleansed and decorated with beautiful ornaments by their mothers. You should come here, and after you've taken your bath, eaten your lunch, and been decorated with ornaments, you may play with your friends again later. And that way she brought him home. So when Upananda had heard that they were playing with the deep part of the river, when his wife explained this to him, and actually Mother Yasoda did have a big festival on that day anyway, and she gave Krishna so much wealth to give away to the Brahmins. Krishna loved to be charitable. That's very good, isn't it? What do we want to beg Krishna in charity? We should consider. So then Upananda, he announced in the assembly hall of King Nanda that our situation here is not good in Gokul. First of all, the cows have already, we are meant to be, cowherd people have to be peripadectic. We have to be moving because the cows, they with their hard hoofs, they step on everything, all the grass, and they destroy the grass, and they pull down all the leaves from the trees. And look, there's nothing left for them to eat here. And not only that, but Krishna has been attacked by so many demons here. First there was Putana. Second there was Shakatasura. Third, there was Trinavarta. And then, as innocent Krishna was playing, two great trees fell down, and it is only by the grace of Lord Narayan that he was saved. So let us move from here. Where should we go? We should go to the forest of Vrindavan. There, the Yamuna flows so sweetly. And there is Giriraj Govardhan. And everything is provided by Giriraj Govardhan. Everything, all our needs will be provided. So let us go to Vrindavan. And immediately upon hearing the words of Upananda, all the residents of Vrindavan, all the cowherd men immediately agreed. And as Srila Prabhupada said, when something is auspicious, one should do it immediately. So immediately, the residents of Gokul packed up everything, their pots there, everything that they had, and took, and they had the calves drink the milk of the cows so that they wouldn't be thirsty during the journey, and they immediately left for Vrindavan. And it was a wonderful scene with the cows, hundreds and hundreds, thousands, hundreds of thousands of cows, all mooing and moving from Gokul to Vrindavan, and then the carts, and Krishna and Balaram were in a cart with Rohini and Yashoda, and they were performing pastimes. Pastimes means that everything that they did, it didn't have to be something like lifting Govardhan Hill or kicking with Krishna's toe. He was underneath the cart. Just a little boy with the most, just a baby And with his little toe, he went, as babies kicked their feet, and the whole cart. So those are pastimes, but everything Krishna did was a pastime. And the pastime's purpose was to cause bliss in the hearts of all his beloved devotees, rasa, causing tidal waves of ecstatic affection, of different varieties of ecstatic affection, to carry the devotees from one realm of ecstasy to another. And in this way, Krishna, the Lila Purushottam, enjoys. This is his pleasure. He is always enjoying. So he performed in the cart. He was performing so many pastimes, inconceivably wonderful pastimes that were little in nature. And he was sitting on the lap of Balaram some of the time. And he said to Balaram, to his mother, everyone was moving, the carts were moving. And he said to his mother, when are we going home? Because he's a little boy. And his mother said, we are going to our new home, and we have taken our, and these carts are now our home. And Krishna said, how is it possible that these carts are our home? We have put everything in them. There's a facility for cooking. We sleep here, therefore they're our home. The cows are here, everyone is here. But these carts are moving. How could there be a home? But we're taking our home with us. And Mother Yashoda pointed that, because when you see this on a train or a car, that the immediate scenery is moving, but the faraway trees seem to be standing still. So she said, see, even though those trees over there are coming with us, they're standing still and coming with us. And Krishna said, oh. And then Balaram said, will the Yamuna also come with us? And Krishna said, of course the Yamuna will come with us because the trees are coming with us. Why won't the Yamuna come with us? And then Krishna started asking questions because the Vrindavan forest has such a sweetness and so many things, everything meant for Krishna's pleasure. And Krishna, acting as a little boy, said, what is that creature over there that is walking and looks like an antelope and looks like a deer? Oh, that's this kind of deer. And what is that kind of tree that has so many fruits on it? Oh, what, that is that kind of a tree. And what is that tree that's leaves are rustling like the tail feathers of a peacock dancing? Oh, that is an aswata tree. And if you've seen that, when there's a wind with a banyan tree, an aswata tree, its leaves rustle and make this wonderful sound, which is just like the sound of a peacock's feather, the feathers of a peacock dancing. And in this way, Krishna and Balaram and everyone at this time was just talking about Krishna and singing. He killed Trinavarta. He did this. And in this way, everyone was filled with ecstasy. And there's one verse spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami that describes this. That is, Vrindavanam Govardhanam Yamuna Pulanali Nanija Vikshashid Uttama Priti Rama Madhavayor Nripa. That when Krishna, for the first time, because he was entering Vrindavan and seeing the dust of Vrindavan forest for the first time, and because that dust of Vrindavan, who is the Lord of Vrindavan? It is Vrindadevi, but it is Vrindavanishwari, Srimati Radharani. So these were the times for newer pastimes to take place. So when Krishna saw the dust of Vrindavan, he saw Govardhan Hill, for the first time. And he saw the banks of the Yamuna there in Vrindavan for the first time. He was filled with the highest ecstasy. Then they reached the bank of the Yamuna, and they stopped there for some time, thinking how would they get everything across, and it appears that they made like a they made the boats into like a bridge, and they brought everything across. The carts came across on the bridge of boats, and then Krishna on his cart came across. First the cows and calves were sent across, and then Krishna came across, and then he and Balaram jumped off the cart and for the first time touched the dust of Vrindavan forest. What a wonderful time that was for Vrindavan. So, continuing with Bahulasva's prayers, you are giving audience to us who constantly meditate on your lotus feet. And then text 32. You have said, and this is from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, neither Ananta, goddess Sri, nor unborn Brahma, Aja, is dearer to me than my unalloyed devotee. And to prove your own words true, you have now revealed yourself to our eyes. So Krishna is telling that to Uddhava, that how dear his devotees to him. We won't need that comment. Yes, here it is. And that verse is from the 11th canto again. 11:14-15. My dear Uddhav, neither Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Shankarshan, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self is as dear to me as you are. And from the BBT purport, Srila Madhavacharya cites from Vedic literature, this is the purport to that verse in the 11th canto, the example that a gentleman sometimes neglects his own interests and that of his own children to give charity to a poor beggar. Similarly, the Lord gives preference to a helpless devotee who depends completely on his mercy. The only way to obtain the Lord's mercy is through his causeless love. And the Lord is most lovingly inclined towards those devotees who are most dependent on him, just as ordinary mothers and fathers worry more about their helpless children than about those who are self-sufficient. Thus, even if one lacks any material qualification, one should simply depend upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any other interest, and surely one will achieve the highest perfection of life. So a very nice and relevant comment on how to get the mercy of Krishna, and it is to be dependent on him. Well, there's, in that regard, let me just read a little bit later, we'll read that one. So going to 33. Kunu tak twat charanam bojam evam vid visvajet pumam niskin chananam shatanam muninam yas tvam atmada. Now remember who is speaking this verse. This is a king. He says, what person who knows this truth, that you give yourself to your devotees? What person who knows this truth would ever abandon your lotus feet when you are ready to give your very self to peaceful sages who call nothing their own? And this is a king who's speaking this. And Krishna has come to this king because his mood is pure. as a servant. Srila Prabhupada in a lecture once gave two examples of a Niskinchana devotee. One was Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who possessed nothing at all, no possessions at all. And the other was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was also Niskinchana, but who built a marble palace, in the words of Prabhupada. But it was for the pleasure of Krishna, for the pleasure of Mahaprabhu. So what do we want in this world, and what is worth being attached to in this world? What is ours in this world? What will we take with us? So we want to develop this kind of a relationship and dependence on Krishna. And it is, from that springs Krishna's mercy. You're ready to give your very self to peaceful sages, those who are peaceful in this situation, who call nothing their own. Appearing, this is text, Twama Kinshana Gotara, Kunti Devi also said that. Appearing in the Yadu dynasty, this is text 34, you have spread your glories, which can remove all the sins of the three worlds, just to deliver those entrapped in the cycle of birth and death. Appearing in the Yadu dynasty, you have spread your glories, which can remove all the sins of the three worlds, just to deliver those entrapped in the cycle of birth and death. Krishna performs his pastimes for his pleasure, for the pleasure of his devotees, and also to give us things to think about and talk about and become captured by his pastimes, his beautiful pastimes, to meditate upon, to think about, to become absorbed in. Srila Jiva Goswami comments in this regard to text 34. Related to this, you have now appeared and distributed your quality of unlimited mercy everywhere to the highest degree. Krishna wants to be merciful to us, and this is the simple form of his mercy in the holy names, in his pastimes and activities. They are there for us. They are there for us. But are we there for them? Is the question that we ask ourselves. You are merciful to your pure devotees in this world. Being merciful to the pure to your pure devotees in this world, you have distributed your glories more than before. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, appearing in the Yadu dynasty, you spread your fame, which destroys all sins of the three worlds, in order to stop the repeated cycle of birth and death of mankind. We have to hear Krishna Katha. Here, where Kunti Devi's prayers again. Others say you appeared. The purpose of Krishna's appearance was to rejuvenate, to bring to life the devotional service of hearing, remembering, and worshipping, and so on, so that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, these persons certainly see your lotus feet, which he is seeing right before him and massaging. If we hear and chant and repeat the transcendental activities of Krishna, or even be happy by others engaging in those activities, we will see Krishna's lotus feet, which can alone stop the repetition of birth and death. And Srila Prabhupada has commented on this verse from the first canto by saying, the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna cannot be seen by our present conditional vision. In order to see him, one has to change his present vision. There has to be an internal change. We cannot take our present mind, our present intelligence, our present false ego with us and be with Krishna. There has to be a change at the core of our consciousness. Means at the level of who we think we are. That is the transformation that is required to be with Krishna. Our full concept of what we are, who we are, has to change from being on the upadis, the so many impositions that we have over our true self, and we have to become Krishna's, and Krishna has to become ours. And this is enacted by the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna in the association of devotees, by worshipping the deity with devotion in the mood that this king worshipped, by chanting in that mood, a deep calling out to Krishna. So Prabhupada continues, one has to change his present vision by developing a different condition of life, a different condition of life, full of spontaneous love of Godhead. We have to become spontaneous lovers of Krishna. There is just no other way. Just as we tend, or I tend, to spontaneously do things on a selfish, petty level. So many thoughts, so many activities, so many emotions come to me spontaneously, which are all based on selfishness and misconceptions. That has to change for us to be with Krishna fully. And the change has to be spontaneously, spontaneously falling in love with Krishna. And that comes by association, we say by hearing the Bhagavatam, we say by the holy names, we say by the mercy of the deity, and living in a holy place. But ultimately it comes by mercy. When we make our sincere attempt to be with Krishna, even though it is insufficient, it is just our little baby tottering steps. But that sincere attempt attracts Krishna's mercy. So how? What is the best engagement of whatever sincerity we have, so we'll get attract Krishna's mercy? Of course, we cannot force Krishna's mercy because it is a haituki, it is causeless. But service, in a serving mood, not just work, but serving to please Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's servants. By hearing sincerely and letting the different moods, letting the consciousness of exalted souls like Bahulasva, let it inform our consciousness, let it touch our consciousness. By chanting sincerely, by thinking of Krishna sincerely, we try our best. And that naturally evokes the mercy of Krishna. As we used to hear in the early days of the movement, when we take one step to Krishna, he takes, sometimes we used to hear 10, sometimes we used to hear 100 or 1,000 steps to us. So Krishna is spreading his own glories for this purpose. That's what this verse says. Appearing in the Yadu dynasty, you have spread your glories, or just to deliver those entrapped in the cycle of birth and death. So he's acting for us. And how do we react to his activities for us? Do we see it as Mahulasva saw it, as Krishna's graciousness, his kindness? And do we take advantage of it? If the more we can take advantage of Krishna's kindness, the more fortunate we are, obviously. And then in the two final verses that are spoken by Mahulasva, he offers his obeisances to Krishna and then makes his request. So he says, Namastubhyam Bhagavate, this is text 35, Krishnaika kunta medasa narayanaya rishayes sushantam tapa iyushe. Nama, my obeisance is tubhyam to you, Bhagavate, to the Supreme Lord Krishnaya, to that Supreme Lord Krishna, who is akunta, unconstricted. There is no limit to Krishna. No limit of time, no limit of place, no limit of capacity. His mercy can touch us anywhere. His kindness is not limited by anything of this world. And he has unconstricted what? Mentioning specifically intelligence. So he can also find the exact situation, a way to give us his mercy, as he has found such an amazing way to give mercy to Mahulasva by coming, by chariot, with sages. And then he says, Narayanaya Rishaye, and he offers his obeisances, Sushantam Tapa Iyushe. He offers his obeisances to Naranarayan Rishi, who is performing austerities. So in this regard, I'll read the final verse, because that will make more sense of this verse. He says, please stay a few days in our house, along with these brahmanas, O all-pervading one, and with the dust of your feet sanctify this dynasty of Nimi. Please come and stay in my home. You're all pervading. You're here anyway. Now please personally come. And he's referred to Naranarayan Rishi just previously, because Naranarayan Rishi is performing austerities. So you are used to living in opulent Dwarka. And surely in our simple palace, it will be austere for you. But you in the form of Naranarayan Rishi is peaceful despite all the austerities. So please come and stay in our house so we have the opportunity to be with you, to serve you, to be in your presence. So that ends these prayers, these six prayers of the king. And let me just check and see if there was anything else I wanted to read. Oh, yes. This is something by Srila Prabhupada from the Krishna book. Because despite all the thousands of thoughts and trivial, small, petty, and even big consequential things that flood our consciousness day after day, what the king is saying, that what attracts Krishna is not those things, obviously, but it's remembrance of him. Mam anusmara yudhyacha, Krishna told Arjuna. You remember me while doing your duty, somehow or another. Fight, even fighting. Krishna said, remember me Whatever duties we do should be filled with remembrance of Krishna somehow or another. Easy to do? Well, if one has spontaneous love for Krishna, it's completely natural. But difficult otherwise. But yet, the attempt to remember Krishna is so powerful that it will attract Krishna's attention and mercy to us. So Prabhupada stresses in the Krishna book, in this particular section in 35, which is in chapter 35, which is the gopis' remembrances of Krishna when they're not with him. This is what he says. Please listen. Such descriptions of Krishna's transcendental pastimes and activities were remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan. They give us some idea of how attractive Krishna is, not only to human beings, but to all animate and inanimate objects. In Vrindavan, everyone and everything is attracted to Krishna, including the plants, the trees, the water, and animals like deer and cows. That is the perfect description of Krishna's all-attractiveness, that Krishna attracts everyone and everything. The example of the gopis is very instructive to persons who are trying to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. One can very easily associate with Krishna simply by remembering his transcendental pastimes. Everyone has a tendency to love someone. That Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. That Krishna should be the object of our love is the central point in Krishna consciousness. And by constantly chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and remembering the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, one can be fully in Krishna consciousness and thus make his life sublime and fruitful. Now, one can ask the question, how could I possibly do that? Or, to make the question even more technical, how can my material mind, which is so full of material thoughts, reach the level of transcendence and actually be able to perceive Krishna and be spontaneously attracted to Krishna, which makes everything easy? So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur addresses that very important question of how is it possible that I could do this? Because if we think something is impossible, we won't even take a first step towards it. We won't have the encouragement. So please be encouraged by these words of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's. A siddha devotee, a perfected devotee, is able to grasp the spiritual lotus, the spiritual cloud, the spiritual lightning of, in this case, of Vrindavan or Krishna's form or Krishna's pastimes, by spiritual intelligence, by spiritual senses. The spiritual potency easily conveys the Lord's eyes, his body and cloth, which are compared to lightning, lotus clouds, and the lotus cloud and lightning. So there's an analogy being given in the Upanishads describing Krishna. So when one has spiritual intelligence, one can perceive the spiritual element of that. When one is purely spiritual, one perceives Krishna in these examples. However, the sadhaka devotee, though he cannot grasp these things with his spiritual intelligence and senses, because he doesn't have any yet, by applying the concept of material lotus, cloud and lightning to the Lord. He can make them enter his intelligence. In other words, if we think that Krishna is the most beautiful, we take a material concept, whatever our concept of beauty is, and try to apply it to unlimited beauty. And of course we fall short, because the concept that we're basing our thought on is material. It is limited. And if we take 50 limiteds, 1,000 limiteds, 100,000 unlimiteds, and pile them on top of each other, we cannot reach the unlimited. We can look at Giriraj, and we cannot see the real Giriraj. We look at the dust of Vrindavan, we cannot see real Vrindavan. We try to conceive of the spiritual beauty of Krishna, and we cannot actually perceive it. While this fully spiritual person can. So if the sadhaka applies the concepts, his material concepts, the most beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly merciful, if he, or in this particular words of Vishwanath, material cloud, lotus, and lightning to the Lord, he can make them enter his intelligence. And by concentrating his mind in this way, he then becomes joyful under the impression that he is meditating on the Lord, even though he is not even touching the Lord's effulgence, because it's material concepts. We're on the material level. So that is not the encouragement that I was speaking of. That is, in one sense, quite discouraging, thinking that all I'm doing is piling material concept on material concept and thinking, oh, this is so wonderful, Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful, but I'm not actually touching Krishna. But here comes the words of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But the Lord, controlled by waves of unlimited mercy, thinks, my devotee is meditating on me. The Lord brings that devotee to his feet for service when his bhakti reaches maturity. Thus, by the mercy of the Lord alone, the shastras, the Vedas, are able to convey the form of the Lord. So we should make our attempt. It's limited. We should apply our intelligence, our thoughts, our ability to visualize, our ability to understand. We have these abilities. We have to use them. We must use them in Krishna's service. We must apply them to Krishna. Although we cannot truly perceive Krishna, but it will be so joyful in the attempt. And that very attempt causes Krishna to extend his long arm of mercy to us and uplift us. As Srila Srila Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur both comment on the chanting of the holy name, Nama Viharana Vishnu Yatastad Vishyamati, that the chanting, even if it is not perfect, even if, as in the case of Ajamil, he is calling out the name of his son. How nice. Jai Maharaj, Jai Sachinanda. That calling, because that calling attracts the attention of Krishna. And if somehow or another we attract the attention of Krishna, then our life is perfect. Bahulasva, as a king, somehow sincerely worshipping his deity in remembrance of Krishna, lamenting even, oh, I cannot give up my deity worship for one day. With that devotion, lamenting, Krishna is in Dwarka, but I cannot go. He attracted the attention of Krishna, and although he could not go to Krishna, Krishna went to him. That's mercy. He appreciated the mercy of Krishna. And therefore he was so ecstatic. Okay, thank you very much.